Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at nashvillepublicradio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. It was terrifying to watch on live TV, watching something we all thought was safe and stable completely disintegrate before our eyes. But what's really amazing is that 5 years later, he's running for controller of the city of New York. We'll ask about this rise from the wreckage, plus author Gillian Flynn explains how she knows so much about creepy people. And Carl Castle, finally back from a long break, comments about his triumphant return to our show.
File under badass.
We'll tell you who really saved the day. It all starts up again in our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston.
We, the jury, find George Zimmerman not guilty. So say we all, foreperson.
A Sanford, Florida jury has acquitted George Zimmerman of second-degree murder and manslaughter charges in the shooting death of an unarmed teenager. The former neighborhood watch volunteer claims he shot 17-year-old Trayvon Martin in self-defense last year during an altercation in a gated community. In an interview with NPR, Zimmerman's brother Robert says it's going to take time for his brother to readjust to everyday life.
George is free in the sense of criminal liability. He's a free man, but he's not free in the sense where he's going to have the opportunity to re-engage society in any meaningful way for a long time.
The six-member jury spent more than 16 hours deliberating the case, trying to weigh 3 weeks of often conflicting testimony about who the aggressor was the night Martin was shot. University of Florida law professor Kenneth Nunn says prosecutors could have done a better job in presenting their case.
I think that there was sufficient evidence to show that there was extreme negligence, at least on the part of George Zimmerman in this case. I think what happened, however, is that the prosecutors did not do a very good job of walking the jurors through the elements of the various crimes.
Last night's verdict has sparked demonstrations around the country. A Nobel laureate and former UN official has been sworn in as Egypt's interim vice president. NPR's Greg Dixon reports.
Mohamed El-Baradei had been a leading critic of now-deposed President Mohamed Morsi during Morsi's time in office. Baradei's name had been floated for interim prime minister until more moderate factions objected. His appointment as interim vice president, along with appointing the rest of the interim government, is the next step in the military's transition plan to lead the country back to civilian rule. Nearly 2 weeks ago, the military removed Morsi from office following large street protests calling for his ouster. Members of Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood have called the military coup illegal and consider the interim government illegitimate. They have been staging protests and a sit-in near where Morsi is believed to be held and say they won't leave until he is returned to power. Greg Dixon, NPR News, Cairo.
Work is underway to lift the wreckage of the train that crashed south of Paris on Friday. The BBC's Anna Holligan is at the scene of the crash.
Sporadic crashes of metal and the smell of burning fills the air outside the station just south of Paris. The crane is being used to clear the wreckage from the tracks. Some fear there may still be bodies lodged under the debris. The network operators have already accepted responsibility. Their initial findings suggest a steel bar may have come loose and caused the crash.
The BBC's Anna Holligan reporting. This is NPR News. Police in Vancouver say actor Corey Monteith was found dead in a hotel room yesterday. They had no information on the cause of the death, but said there was no sign of foul play. Monteith played the character Finn Hudson in Glee, the television series about a high school glee club. Monteith had acknowledged problems with substance abuse and had admitted himself to a treatment facility in April. He was 31. Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling's cover as a first-time published male crime novelist has been blown by London Sunday Times. Larry Miller reports Rowling says she had hoped to keep the secret for a bit longer.
J.K. Rowling's nom de plume was Robert Galbraith. The crime novel's title, The Cuckoo's Calling, the publisher described Galbraith as a former military man. Published in April, critics hailed it as a scintillating debut. Galbraith was marked as a writer to watch, but a suspicious Sunday Times thought it was all just a bit too magical and followed the clues. Analysis show the writing very similar to Rowling's, that she and Galbraith share the same agent and editor, and the publisher was part of Little Brown, which last year put out Rowling's first adult novel, The Casual Vacancy. After being outed, Rowling said it was liberating, writing and publishing without hyper pressure and getting feedback under a different name. The second novel, under the name of Robert Galbraith, will be published next year. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
An Australian woman was gored by a bull during today's Running of the Bulls in Pamplona, Spain. Four other runners suffered cuts and bruises. Today was the final day of the nine-day festival, which dates back to at least the 16th century. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. We got a great show for you today. Later on, we'll be joined by Gillian Flynn, a very nice woman who wrote a very disturbing book, the best-selling thriller Gone Girl. But first, I think I speak for everybody when I say, Carl, it is great to have you back.
Good to be back, Peter.
It's great to have you. Am I right? Now, Carl, we told everybody that you were feeling under the weather, like you told us to, but can you tell me now where you were just these last few weeks?
Just wanted to work on my solo project, Peter. I've always thought of us like Simon and Garfunkel. By the way, you're Garfunkel.
I know that, Carl. I've known that the whole time. Well, welcome back, and we're happy to hear from you, too. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Carrie.
Hello,
I'm
Carrie.
I'm from Dallas, although I'm calling tonight from Brigham City, Utah.
Brigham City, Utah.
Yes, it's a little town.
Why are you in Brigham City, Utah?
I grew up here, and so I'm visiting my parents.
Really? And how are they?
They're pretty good. They are thrilled to have their grandkids here.
Oh, I bet they are. Well, welcome to the show, Carrie. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First off, it's a comedian who'll be performing at the Canyon Club in Agoura Hills, California on August 23rd. Maz Jobrani is here.
Hi.
Next, it's the woman behind the syndicated advice column, Ask Amy. That's Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Carrie.
And finally, a comedian who'll be performing at the Chautauqua Auditorium up in the hill in Boulder, Colorado, on August 3rd. It's Paula Poundstone.
Can I please say welcome back to Carl?
You may.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I miss being here.
Yeah. This whole thing was just to make us want you more, isn't it? You played hard to get. You wanted to make us sure we didn't take you for granted.
It was well planned,
wasn't it?
It
was. Well, this is great because you get to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, back in the saddle, is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice, and his voice only, on your home answering device, whatever it may be. You ready to go?
I am.
All right, here is your first quote.
Here we ho again.
That was the headline Monday in the New York Post after Who announced a return to politics.
Is it Elliot Spitzer?
It was Elliot Spitzer. For those who can't find their, you know, complete illustrated concordance to sex scandals, this is not the guy who tweeted pictures of his crotch, and not the guy with the wide stance, and not the guy who hiked the Appalachian Trail with his Argentinian mistress. No, this is the former New York governor who was caught sleeping with high-priced prostitutes while wearing dress socks. He's now running for controller, the financial overseer of the city. He is qualified. As we know, he has a history of paying very expensive bills promptly.
You don't want to give a guy like that cash.
He's
going to go right back to it.
You think so? Well, maybe he'll take the same techniques of commerce to the job. I mean, is he going to go with a much more expensive garbage company because it's a high-class waste management company? The guy's like, no, I'm not a garbage man. I'm a garbage escort. It's totally different. I provide companionship.
Why do they spell controller comptroller? Is it comptroller?
It's spelled like comptroller.
What the hell is that?
After that, he's going to get hoopkers.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Hoopkers. Once you're a comptroller, you get hoopkers.
Well, one of his qualifications for running for, you know, comptroller, as you might say, is that he's experienced putting a P where it shouldn't be, so.
Whoa! Nice.
There you go.
Well, speaking of, control was not his gift.
That's true.
You know, the thing with Spitzer is I can't think of Spitzer without thinking of that horrible, sad the wife beside him.
Kind of the same face that Mrs. Sanford had when you think about it.
Yeah. Sanford, as you know, no, she's dead. Sanford and Son?
No, different Sanford.
Fred G. Sanford.
Yeah. That Sanford?
No, the governor of
South Carolina.
Yeah.
They have a training now to make the face.
Well, what's interesting?
You have to actually, because if you make the face, that means you're not like stabbing like.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm still being supportive, but of course I'm hurt kind of a face. It's
right.
You know, I'd rather he didn't.
Well, as you know,
but he did.
Sanford is back in office.
It's in my head. Once it's in my head, there's nothing I can do about it.
But these guys got, I mean, the sexual stuff, which I'm not saying was good, and cheating is not good.
I don't think it was
But that
good.
Shouldn't affect their political managing side, right?
No, it's good.
There's a lot of worse stuff.
Sometimes I've thought, honestly, when we've had, you know, presidents that philandered a bit, if it was a president that I liked, frankly, I thought, well, I would do them if they do a good job as president.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. That's all I'm saying.
And I don't even like sex, so that...
You are patriotic, then,
Paul. It's just
Paul.
For my country, yes.
Yeah, I understand.
For my country.
Yeah,
your country.
All right. Carrie, here is your next quote.
File under badass.
That was a headline in the Angry Asian Man blog describing the actions of one Kim Ji-yeon, one of the heroic flight attendants, during what disaster last week?
Oh, it was the Asiana flight.
Yes, exactly. The Asiana flight that crashed in San Francisco. Very good. Yes. Now, we all know this actually, for a plane crash, came out well. And what did we learn? Because you think of flight attendants as underpaid, overworked, and hostile sky waiters, right? But in reality, it turns out, we now know, they're an elite team of highly skilled safety ninjas. As soon as Asiana Flight 214 hit the ground in San Francisco, the flight attendants were up and moving. They were getting the doors open. They were inflating those safety slides. They were slinging passengers over their shoulders.
Wow.
That happened. And yet, doing all this, they still weren't able to give out decent snacks for free.
Where was the pilot the whole time?
That's a good question.
Because, wait, now let me get this. Is it that they didn't say anything to each other? That they both thought, oh, we're getting low, but they somehow thought that a machine was controlling it? Is that right?
I am not certain. I do not know personally what happened.
Because I just keep thinking of how they, you know, they keep saying, you know, if you see something, say something. And I thought, well, that would have been a good time.
To say, like, I see the ground, for example.
But they say it's safer than driving. And as a bad driver, I can tell you I think it is.
Oh, yeah. At least you're not responsible for your own safety, Paul. That's a plus.
Yeah,
right?
That is a plus. Plus, you know what? When you're in a plane, other planes don't honk.
That's true. Let us move on, Carrie, to your very last quote.
Mexico takes the cake.
That was a CNN headline trumpeting the fact that Mexico has passed the U.S. for the top spot on what list?
Wow.
Well, I'll give you a hint. CNN was making a little joke because what they implied was that Mexico took the cake and ate the whole thing.
Oh, obesity?
Yes! They have topped us in obesity! We are no longer the most obese nation. We're number two. People all over the country are running outside or waddling outside and going, we're number two. We're number two.
I've been listening to a lot of stories, actually on public radio recently, about sugar content in foods that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
They've just mentioned so many things that were really staples of my life. Like
Kit Kat bars.
I have this feeling that you just can't eat anything. You know, like sometimes late at night, the children and I will just suck on wicker. It's going to turn out that's bad for you.
Yeah. This is great, though. Now that Mexico is the most obese nation, there's some good news. It'll be easier to fight illegal immigration. Instead of a border wall, the U.S. can just put in a couple of stairs. And it's a lot easier to catch, you know, border crossers when they're sort of cruising across the desert in their little rascal mobility scooters. Carl, how did Carrie do in our quiz?
Carrie had a great game, Peter. 3 correct answers. She's a winner.
Nice, well, Carrie. Done, Carrie. Thanks for playing.
It's raining tacos from out of the sky. Tacos, no need to ask why. Just open your mouth.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in beautiful downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, just go over to WBEZ.org and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, the U.S.'s new billion-dollar F-35 fighter jets have failed to meet military standards for speed, acceleration, and handling. Not to worry, though. The Pentagon found a way to fix the situation. What did they do?
Ask everyone else to slow down.
You're actually kind of close. They had set these benchmarks for performance, and it didn't meet the benchmarks.
Oh, they changed the benchmarks.
Exactly. They lowered their standards.
Yeah, good idea.
They basically pretended it was 1 a.m. and they were still in the bar alone. They're like, okay, whatever works for me now. So when the F-35 stealth fighter jet, which has cost $1 trillion to develop, failed its performance tests, the Pentagon just lowered the speed and handling requirements until it could pass. They beat the previous solution, which had pilots getting a red pen and changing the F to an A before they showed their moms. It used to be the Pentagon said of the F-35, this is going to be the fastest, smartest, most advanced fighter jet modern warfare has ever seen. Now they're saying, well, it's got a great personality.
Did I ever tell you my daughter one time... on her report card, my oldest daughter, she changed a D- in science with a black marker into a D+.
It's incremental.
Yeah,
you have to...
I couldn't help laughing when I talked to her. I said, honey, once you're in the D range, you can pretty much let it ride, I think. I showed her how to make a D into a B, and I said, if you ever want to work for the Pentagon, young lady...
Coming up, our panelists lie to you about school. That's our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information is available at progressive.com. Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring with a Floor Finder app for iPad and iPhone. Learn more at lumberliquidators.com. And Angie's List, providing reviews of local roofers, painters, landscapers, and plumbers to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Maz Jobrani, Amy Dickinson, and Paula Poundstone. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you all so much. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Hugh O'Donnell calling from North Tonawanda, New York.
North Tonawanda?
Yes, it's a suburb of Buffalo.
A suburb of Buffalo, I know. That's awesome. What do you do there?
I'm a writer and podcast producer.
Oh, really? So what do you what podcast do you produce?
I produce the Way of the Buffalo podcast.
The Way of the Buffalo?
Yes, we produce short fiction and talk to new media writers and artists.
And is it centered around Buffalo because you're in Buffalo and it's called The Way of the Buffalo?
Well, I just heard a lot of editors saying that short fiction is dying out. It's going the way of the buffalo.
Oh, I see.
Wow.
That's so cool.
Deep.
Well, it's nice to have you with us, Hugh. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell, speaking of fiction, tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Hugh's topic?
I learn good.
We know our schools in America aren't great, but this week we read about a surprising new teaching tool being used somewhere else in the world that makes our schools look a tiny bit gooder. Guess the real story of a new teaching method and you will win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail, whatever you want to use. Ready to play?
Yep.
First, let's hear from Amy Dickinson.
I want to state for the record that my intentions were noble. That's Owen Heitschikl, cultural minister of the Republic of Belarus, apologizing for what went wrong when one man tried to school an entire country on how to party. Heitschikl spent his junior year abroad in Boston. When he became culture minister of his native country last year, he decided to teach the new republic how to celebrate its independence American style. Starting 6 months ago, he ordered state television to play a steady stream of American movies, Yankee Doodle Dandy, Independence Day, and Born on the 4th of July, and launched an education campaign with a flood of cultural messages with no context whatsoever. This led to some confusion. On Independence Day, knowing Americans eat hot dogs, locals ate dogs. A contest to design the Belarus Uncle Sam yielded a Jeff Goldblum look-alike in a stovepipe hat. And then, the mayor of Minsk got creative. With the Belarus Philharmonic blasting the 1812 overture, he unleashed an actual cannon pointed directly at City Hall. Repairs should be completed in time for next year's celebration.
Belarus tries to learn to celebrate their Independence Day our way and does not do a good job of it. Your next story of a new frontier in education comes from Maz Jobrani.
The leading English school in Sao Paulo, Brazil, has found a unique way to teach their students English by correcting celebrity tweets. The task, led by team leader Andrea Baena, is simple. Students between the ages of 8 and 13 were assigned to follow their favorite celebrities on Twitter and then to look for grammar and spelling errors in their Twitter feeds. When the students were able to find an error, they had to read the tweet to their classmates and explain what the mistake was and how to fix it. Then the students would reply to the celebrity tweet. For example, when Rihanna tweeted, "She's my rock, so I hold on to she tight," a student at the school tweeted her back saying, "Hi, at Rihanna. I love your songs. My name is Carolina. I'm 11 years old. It's not to she, it's to her. Bye-bye." Spokespeople for Rihanna could not be reached for this article, but we are pretty sure that she tweeted back, "Hi, 11-year-old Carolina from Brazil. I'm a grown woman and a celebrity, so shut up."
Brazilian schoolchildren learning English by correcting the celebrity tweets they find with errors. Your last story of a new frontier in education comes from Paula Poundstone.
On the tiny island country of Palau, Stevic Patris is huge. The bronze medal he brought home from the heavyweight class of the 2008 Olympic weightlifting competition is the only Olympic medal Palau has earned ever in the history of the small nation. "My picture is all over this island," says Patris, "but what does it matter? I want to give back." And give back he has. Patris is using his celebrity to motivate young students in his country. The schools include weightlifting in almost every subject. Patrice himself is often there to lend a hand. He stands before a group of young math students holding high a 50-kilogram hand weight while he asks, if Stevic wants to carry 100 kilograms altogether, how much more must he carry? Delighted children shout out mostly correct answers. In English class, he goes over the vowel sounds. As he jerks 204 kilograms with a huge smile on his face, he bellows, what letter makes the sound? Oh! Principal Mars Topan is pleased with the results, but wants more. I cannot say enough good things about Mr. Patrice's help with our young people, but there are limits. Of course, our students can only calculate sums up to 408 kilograms because Mr. Petrus cannot lift more than that. Also, many of them think you have to make a funny face in order to use a vowel.
All right, then here are your choices. Somebody's trying to teach something in an unusual way somewhere in the world. Is it from Amy Dickinson, somebody trying to teach independence in Belarus using American techniques and not getting very far? From Maz Joe Brawny, learning English by correcting celebrity tweets in Brazil? Or from Paula Poundstone and the island nation of Palau, their national hero, a weightlifter teaches everything through weightlifting? Which of these is the true story of unusual education in the week's news?
It's a tough choice. I'm going to go with Maz's story.
You're going to go with Maz's story, which was about the celebrity tweet correction in Brazil to teach English grammar.
I used to teach in an ESL program, and I could totally believe that.
Okay. With a personal experience influencing your choice? Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to someone familiar with the true story.
The school was getting its students to correct celebrity tweets, kind of acting like grammar cops.
That was Julie Moore. She was the head of English language programs at Northwestern University here in Chicago. She was talking about students in Brazil learning English by celebrity tweet correction. Congratulations, you got it right. Your instincts were correct. You earned a point for Maz. You've won our prize. Carl Castle, standing right here with us again, will record the greeting on your voicemail. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing with us here. And now the game where somebody works really hard on something difficult and then gets to not care about something ridiculous. It's called Not My Job. Gillian Flynn is a very nice woman who writes books about very unpleasant people. Her mystery thriller, Gone Girl, was a number one New York Times bestseller. We are delighted to have her with us here in the Chase Bank Auditorium. Gillian Flynn, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So you've written three books, all of which were bestsellers, being made for the movies, all deeply twisted thrillers about murderous, strange people. And you're just sitting here smiling at me like the nicest person in the world. What has drawn you to that kind of story?
You know, I always loved thrillers. I always loved scary movies, and my dad was a film professor, and I mean, I had very early memories of, you know, that top-loading VCR, and like, we're going to watch Psycho, funk. Mm. And I mean, I had a crush on Norman Bates. He was one of my first crushes, so.
I'm sorry. Norman Bates, of course, is the murderer, as we find out. I'm sorry if I spoiled that for you, in Psycho. Played famously by Anthony Perkins, and we're watching the movie, and we're all the rest of us human beings are like, oh, he's a scary, obviously twisted individual, and you're like, he's dreamy.
He was so
really?
He was so handsome. He cooked. He made her a sandwich.
Wow.
Your first book was about a really bad mother-daughter relationship. This third book, Gone Girl, is about a really horrible marriage, and I'm sure you have people ask you all the time if like you're okay.
Everyone knows it's just kind of fiction. I feel like I spend about my first 20 minutes at any cocktail party convincing people that I'm not going to harm them in some way.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I really, you know, I'll like, oh, here, have a drink. They're like, no, 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 no. No,
I'm good.
One of the things that, and I want to be very, very careful, but there is a very, because I don't want to give anything away, there's a very smart criminal who plots a really perfect crime. And obviously, to write that person, you have to do that, right? You have to be able to plot. You, as the author, have to plot a perfect crime. So do you ever sit around and like get rudely served by a barista and go, I could kill you and I'll never be caught.
I'll see you tomorrow night. I actually really do think I could do it. I really think.
Really?
Yeah, I really do.
So if I said to you, I mean, I don't. I just want to say, okay, Ira Glass. If I wanted to kill Ira Glass, and I'm not saying I do because he's a nice guy, but let's say I did.
You're giving me like a signal, like a code.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. I have the worst feeling that we're going to be listening to this tape like as evidence in a trial. You know.
One of the things about the book that I love is something that maybe I'm dumb, I don't read enough mysteries, but all the characters in your book, as they go through this disappearance and this crime and this investigation, are constantly saying, oh, this is just like on TV.
Yeah.
Characters start thinking about how they're going to play the role that they know they're going to play in the drama they've seen before.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, how does the accused husband act in this? At a certain point, he's just trying to figure out what to wear. You know, what do wear when you're a grieving husband to the press conference? Because you'd have to do that, right?
If I am unjustly accused of a crime, how should I behave? Just in case it happens. Okay. Just in case Ira does die soon.
Just for instance.
Which I will have nothing to do with.
I saw the wink again.
You did. But how should you behave?
Well, I think like a short sleeve button down would be the proper thing to wear.
So go for the dork look right
away. I just think it's a nice harmless look. It's sort of like, I'm casual. I may kill. I may have not killed.
Flower.
But I'm comfortable.
A short sleeve.
Like, floral pattern, like I'm celebrating. And
yeah, I'm feeling good.
No, you're
partying,
talking,
bro.
Moss, you got like umbrella drink.
Shirt. Yeah, no.
She's going
like a plaid.
More pocket protector, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But not with a tie.
Yeah,
that's too formal.
Oh, no, a tie says did it.
Exactly. You want to be relaxed.
You never see like a male defendant in a tutu. And I think... I think it would just throw people enough that they might get off. Can I ask you a question? When you do this writing, how do you do it? Do you get up? Like, do you have a, you know, do people call in the middle of the day and you go, I'm working? Do you not answer the phone? Do you start at a certain time and end? How do you discipline yourself to have all those ideas come together on a piece of paper?
Well, I'm a writer, so I do like the distraction. So I will always pick up the phone if you call me. It's like, what's going on? I can stop writing for a while.
Right. Do you start at a certain time during the day? Start writing?
I really do try to do kind of 9 to 5.
Paul, are you trying to find out when Gillian is home?
I'm afraid of her.
I understand.
And I just want to make sure that we're safe.
So, Gillian... You live here in Chicago, which we're very proud of, your fellow Chicagoans, that you're here with us. Now, have you ever, like, because this is a huge bestseller, and I was seeing it everywhere, have you ever gotten on a train, CTA, say, here in Chicago, and seen somebody sitting reading your book?
I have never seen the book in the wild yet. Isn't that
really
crazy? No, I try to go around, because I would love nothing more than to tap someone on the shoulder and say, you know, how are you liking the book?
Gillian,
Hold on, stop.
Do it with that voice, will you?
Would you
holding a little knife.
Would you walk up? Would you put your like chin in your hand for the author photo and go hi?
Holding my glasses, sort of askew.
Look familiar? Mm-hmm. Do I?
My best friend from childhood was out having dinner, and the woman next to her was reading Gone Girl, and so she said, how are you liking the book? And the woman said, slam. Well, have you read it? All I know is that there is something wrong with the lady who wrote this. And she's like, yeah.
Well, Gillian Flynn, we are delighted to talk to you. And we've asked you here today to play a game that this time we're calling...
Sit right back and you'll hear a quiz.
You're named Gillian, as a Gillian, you're just one G short of being a Gilligan. So we're going to ask you 3 questions about the classic TV series that no doubt inspired your name, Gilligan's Island. Get 2 right and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Gillian Flynn playing for?
Gillian is playing for Karen Esty of Columbia, North Carolina.
Give it up for Karen. The music for the show was composed in part by what famous musician? A. John Williams, B. Stephen Sondheim, or C. David Hasselhoff?
I'd like to think it'd be Hasselhoff because of the kind of German influence.
Yes, of course.
But I think I'm gonna go John Williams.
So John Williams, the famous composer.
Theme. Yeah.
Yes, you're right,
yeah.
John Williams.
Wow!
Long before he did Jaws and Star Wars and Superman and all those other classics of movie songwriting. He did this. This is, you're about to hear, the original theme song for Gilligan's Island.
Two secretaries from USA sail on a Mino this lovely day. A high school teacher is next aboard, all taking trips that they cannot afford. The next two people are millionaires. They got no worries.
It goes on.
Oh, I just watched it.
The pilot episode was just 25 minutes of that song and then 5 minutes of it. All right. Very good. Here's your second question. After the show became popular in syndication in the 60s and 70s, a number of sequel TV movies were made, including which of these? A, Gilligan's Island After Dark. B, Footprints When Jesus Walked on Gilligan's Island. Or C, The Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island.
Wow. I absolutely know that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember this. I think that's C, right?
Yeah, The Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island. It involves The Harlem Globetrotters coming to Gilligan's Island. All right, last question. Let's go for perfect here. Something in the real world was recently named Gilligan's Island after the beloved show. What is it? A, the members-only washroom of Congress. B, a giant floating pile of garbage. Or C, those little free-floating patches of hair some hipsters have on their cheeks.
It sounds a little too on the nose to be the free-floating pile of garbage,
yeah.
But I'm going to go with that.
You're right again.
All right.
The pile of garbage is twice the size of Texas and is called Gilligan's Island because it's made of trash and will not go away.
Wow.
Carl, how did Gillian Flynn do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. 3 correct answers, so she's a winner.
Congratulations. Gillian Flynn's latest book is Gone Girl. I won't say any more about it, except you should all read it immediately. Gillian Flynn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
What a pleasure to have you. Ladies and gentlemen, Gillian Flynn. Gone Girl. In just a minute, Carl feeds me dinner by regurgitating into my mouth.
Oh, God.
Nice. You don't want to miss that. It's a listener limerick challenge that's for the birds. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. To join us on air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur Language Program, celebrating 50 years in 2013 and offering portable audio courses in 50 languages, Pimsleur.com. Lumber Liquidator, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at LumberLiquidators.com. Esurance, an Allstate company with a network of repair shops to handle car insurance claims and provide photos of their progress at esurance.com. And Angie's List, providing reviews of local roofers, painters, landscapers, and plumbers to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Amy Dickinson, Paula Poundstone, and Maz Jobrani. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl makes his rhyme umphant return in the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, a new study by the London School of Economics says there's one activity that makes us so unhappy, the only thing we rank worse than it is being physically ill. What is it?
Is it done in the home?
No, specifically. Well, sometimes. Some people do it in the home. Gillian Flynn does it in the home.
Oh, killing.
You went right there, didn't you?
Butchering.
I'll give you a hand. It's like, hi-ho, hi-ho.
Working.
Oh, crap. Yes, working.
Oh, working at
working
home?
Is the word. No, working in general is the worst thing ever. The researchers...
Both ways!
Yeah. It's been proved. Researchers sent questions to thousands of subjects at random times of the day via a smartphone app, and they asked what they were doing and how they felt. The people who answered at work reported being more miserable than everybody, except for the people who answered currently vomiting.
So wait a minute. But there were people working at home or people just working?
People just working. If they say,
No.
Take it away, Paula.
I'd like to know how they did the study.
Why don't you explain?
Okay, yeah, but to whom did they send the question?
Apparently they sent it to an appreciatively random enough group of people they could get a good response.
No. Are you working right now?
I am.
Is it a step away from vomiting?
I'd have to vomit and see which I prefer. Maz, a designer from Latvia has come up with an invention that promises to change the world or at least make some of it cleaner and more efficient. What is it?
Vacuum.
No, although a vacuum would be a fine thing. Combination of two things.
Combination of two things.
Very common.
I missed a lot of news pieces together.
I know.
Well, for starters, there's a soap dispenser next to the flush handle.
Oh, it's a toilet flushing thing that flushes. It's a toilet flusher, obviously. You said a flush handle.
Yes.
And there's a dispenser.
Right? Yeah, that's basically what I said. You just said back to me. But what does?
No, I'm just making sure we're on the same page.
It has those things.
You know, I actually know the answer to this, and it's something I thought guys did anyway. So I didn't know this was an invention.
What? Pee on the handle?
Go ahead, Amy.
Flush handle.
It's a urinal sink.
That's exactly what it is.
What?
It's a combination urinal sink.
I thought you guys did that anyway. I don't know.
We did what anyway?
I thought you peed in the sink.
No, here's the thing. The problem is that men, as you may know, tend not to wash their hands after doing their business at the urinal, right? And this is because sinks are located sometimes as much as 7 or 8 feet. From the urinal, and it's easier to just wipe your hands on the front of your pants as you come out of the bathroom so it looks like you washed your hands.
Oh, God.
So designer Kasper Jursens has come up with a modern solution. It's a urinal with a built-in tap. So it automatically turns on when you finished adding to the urinal. It turns on, and you can just reach out and wash your hands.
Now, you're going to tell me that a guy who invents a urinal/sink isn't happy in his work?
Paula, according to a new American health study,
yes,
you can cheer yourself up and ward off cravings for junk food simply by doing what?
Don't just tell me. Just give me a hint and I'll get it.
Instead of calling Domino's, get out your sketchbook.
Oh, you can draw a picture of the food?
Yes, you can draw a pizza. Apparently,
ridiculous! You do all week. I've heard you answer people before about how you write the show, how you research, and you find news stories, and then you put it. But you didn't do that this week, did you?
We do like to look for stories that will set you off. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. What is it? This is one about peeing on the pizza. What is this? What the hell is this?
You don't
just draw a picture of pizza and then you're satisfied.
Apparently, you can because
no, you can't.
Here's the idea.
Yeah.
So everybody knows that it's really funny. You're like feeling a little peckish, you're a little bored. Oh, I'm going to order the pizza. You order the pizza. You eat the pizza. It's a lot of pleasure, but then there's a lot of regret afterwards.
Absolutely.
You feel full, right?
Yeah.
So what they did was they had people who wanted a pizza just draw the pizza, and apparently just visualizing the pizza enough to draw it released all these endorphins and pleasure centers in the brain, so they actually were happy and didn't want the pizza anymore.
Where did they get the people? Who did they...
The same people who are unhappy at work.
See, you know what it was? You know what it was?
What was it, Paul?
Okay. Sometimes the late night staff at a pizza place, they don't have enough people. You know what I mean? Yeah. So they're like, you know, they have to say stuff like, yeah, we'll deliver it, but it's going to be 2 hours, you know? Right. And so finally there's some guy who will go, you know what? Draw it.
Just draw. I'm not going to get there in time. Draw the damn thing.
Yeah. Just draw it and then call me back. Tell me how it went. I'm doing a study for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
But if this is... if this is the case, then all Mexico has to do is start drawing burritos.
Man, when I learn how to draw a Butterfinger, I'm going to drop some pounds.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. Okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
Joked on a pitcher. Favorite thing is to pretend I'm not here. Have you ever noticed that? Go ahead, go ahead.
I just inquired after your health. Wasn't that industrial?
No, that was very sweet. Okay. Thank you.
Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week we tell you how to make friends when you're stranded on a desert island. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, hi.
Hi, who's this?
Maxine in Jamestown, Tennessee.
Jamestown. I don't know where Jamestown, Tennessee is. Where is Jamestown?
Well, it's sort of midway between Knoxville and Nashville.
Okay. And, yeah. What do you do there?
I'm a retired nurse.
Okay.
And so I do whatever I want.
Well, what do you...
Wow.
All right. Maxine, welcome to the show. Carl Castle, back with us again, is returning to the verse form. He's going to perform for you three news-related limericks with that last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
Evolution has not reached its peak. For example, our teeth are still weak. Teeth like sharks, not absurd, or we'll be more like birds. Yes, we humans just might grow a...
beak.
Yes, a beak. Humans might well someday evolve beaks, according to researchers at Sheffield University. This is because beaks are superior to teeth in that they don't rot or fall out, and also because, thanks to the Supreme Court, humans now have the right to mate with birds.
So does that mean my big nose means I'm more evolved than you guys?
You are, yeah. Here is your next limerick.
Make sure that your shoes are off, mister. Right hand red, don't be touching my sister. Chuck Foley has passed, but his memory will last. He invented the party game.
Twister!
Yes! We take a moment this week to mark the passing of Chuck Foley, the inventor of the game Twister. Mr. Foley invented it in the mid-60s in St. Paul, Minnesota, a place noted for both good times and sexual repression. Without Twister, millions of 14-year-old boys would never have accidentally been able to touch the boobs of millions of 14-year-old girls at birthday parties. Here's your last limerick.
My kid's got a modeling gig. She's a month old and bald as a pig. We're not going to go with a cute little bow. No, we're fitting her for a small...
wig.
Yes! A wig. Baby bangs is the name of a new, quote, fashionable wig for babies,
oh,
if you don't
God.
Like the bald look on your baby daughter, or if you're just tired of your baby being mistaken for a baby. So far, it's just for girls, like I said, but baby boys are anxiously awaiting the launch of My First Comb-Over. Carl, how did Maxine do in our quiz?
Perfect, Peter. Three correct answers. Maxine, you win our
awesome.
Prize.
Awesome.
All right, Maxine.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Maxine. Thanks for playing.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Amy Dickinson and Paula Poundstone have the lead. Each has 3 points. Maz Jobrani has 2.
So, Maz, you're definitely in third place. You're going to start first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. After overthrowing Morsi, military leaders named Hazem el-Beblawi as the new prime minister of blank.
Egypt.
Right. Investigators said Wednesday that improperly set handbrakes were most likely the cause of a big train crash in blank.
Quebec.
Yes. This week, NSA leaker blank said he would most likely go to Venezuela for asylum.
Snowden.
Right. In a public plea, officials at the Death Valley National Park have asked visitors to please stop blanking.
Littering?
No, frying eggs on the ground. On Monday, the CEO of bookstore chain Blank unexpectedly announced his resignation.
Barnes & Noble.
Yes, Andy Murray of Britain and Marion Bartoli of France were the champions at Blank this year.
Wimbledon.
Yes, an Ohio man who passed away last week requested 6 Cleveland Browns to be his pallbearers so they could blank.
Spike them in there.
No. That would be funny, though. No, he wanted his pallbearers to be 6 members of the Cleveland Browns football team so they could, quote, let him down one last time.
Oh! Whoa! Whoa! Hostile to the end.
Scott E. Ensminger lived a full and happy life, punctuated each year with the disappointment known by all fans of the Cleveland Browns. Mr. Ensminger, you left a hole in our hearts bigger than the one in the Browns secondary. Carl, how did Maz do on our quiz?
Maz had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points.
All right. You flipped a coin. Amy has elected to go next. So, Amy, fill in the blank. This week, the 3 women who were rescued after being kidnapped in blank released a video thanking their supporters.
Cleveland.
Yes. On Wednesday, Johar Sardanayev pleaded not guilty to 30 charges relating to the bombing at the blank.
The Boston Marathon.
Right. Fueling speculation of a future presidential run, Texas Governor Blank announced he will not run for a 4th term there.
Rick Perry in Texas, right.
Rick Perry in Texas. To protest prison conditions and rules, almost 30,000 inmates in California began a blank this week.
A hunger strike.
Yes. A man who was arrested on drunk driving charges got himself into more trouble after he allegedly blanked.
These ones, they usually involve pants. Well... More trouble, drunk driving, after he drove the cruiser into a light pole.
After he ate part of the patrol car. General Mills announced this week it was renaming the classic food product Hamburger Helper, and it will now be called Blank.
Hamburger Assistant?
No, it will be called merely Helper. The hamburger is silent. This week, Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Announced and the cheese stands alone.
Yes. This week, Elizabeth Hasselbeck announced that she was leaving the ABC show Blank for a new job at Fox News.
The View.
Right. KFC is considering suing a restaurant in Thailand for using its logo and replacing Colonel Sanders with Blank.
The Buddha.
No. They replaced Colonel Sanders with Hitler. Yum Brands, which owns KFC, was pretty ticked off when they noticed that the new Hitler restaurant in Bangkok was using the Colonel Sanders logo with Adolf Hitler's head photoshopped in. Yum Brands is planning legal action, but the owners of the Hitler restaurant say they're very sorry for insulting a chicken restaurant by associating it with a symbol of intolerance, and next time they'll just go with Chick-fil-A. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 13 points and has taken the lead.
All right, then.
Paula.
How many, then, does Paula need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
Okay, Paula, this is for the game. Please fill in the blank. Because of tensions with Hamid Karzai, President Obama said this week he may pull all troops out of blank by 2014.
Afghanistan.
Right. A Florida judge ruled this week that jurors can consider manslaughter charges against blank in the death of Trayvon Martin.
Zimmerman.
Right. On Wednesday, a federal judge ruled that Apple has colluded with 5 publishers to drive up the price of blank.
E-books.
Right. On Wednesday, the blank company announced it would separate its publishing and broadcasting units.
The Tribune?
Yes, although she admits she has no proof. A woman in Epping, New Hampshire has become convinced that blank.
That her neighbors are aliens.
No, that a bear stole her purse.
Yes.
In his first game back on Thursday, Yankee blank was forced to leave early due to injury.
Jeter!
Yeah, Derek Jeter. Yes, Justin Bieber faced angry criticism this week for defacing a picture of Bill Clinton and blanking.
cursing.
No, he peed in a janitor's cleaning bucket.
No!
He did, after a California fugitive tweeted, "Catch me if you can." Authorities blanked her because they blank.
They caught her because they could.
Exactly right. Wanda Leanne Pagurski skipped her bail and then taunted authorities in San Diego by sending the DA's office a tweet saying, "Catch me if you can." Well, they could. The U.S. Fugitive Task Force arrested Pagurski last week in Mexico, and according to a spokesman, quote, "We weren't even going to look for her, and then she got all snippy about it." Carl, did Paula do well enough to win? Because she did pretty well.
Well, she needed at least 5 to tie, but she had 6 correct answers. So, yeah! Paula Poundstone is district champion.
Well done, Paula.
Well, thank you very much. I studied.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict how America will once again make itself number one now that we've lost our obesity crown. But first, let me tell you, the support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Subaru, introducing the all-new 2014 Forester Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. Arizona State University Online, more than 60 undergraduate and graduate online degree programs at radio.asu.edu. Kobo, with more than 3.5 million ebook titles and a variety of e-readers at independent bookstores, store locator at indiebound.org, and CarMax, offering more than 35,000 used cars and trucks online and in stores from coast to coast. Learn more at CarMax.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Godeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our intern is Miles to Go Before I Dern Boss. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Twister Danforth. Now, panel, how will the U.S. distinguish itself? Maz Jobrani.
We will finally reform our immigration laws and allow only fat Mexicans to come in, regaining our status as number one fattest place in the world.
Amy Dickinson.
We still have a lot to be proud of because we still lead the world in periodontal disease.
Awesome. And Paula Poundstone.
We're no longer number one in obesity, but don't you worry, we'll get it back.
Well, if the United States does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. So wonderful to have you back with us. Carol Castle, better than ever. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Amy Dickinson, Martha Bonney. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.
Support for WPLN comes from Riverside Military Academy in Gainesville, Georgia, educating young men for 106 years, hosting an on-campus open house July 26th. Details are at riversidemilitary.com or 1-800-GO-CADET. Nashville Electric Service has high-speed fiber networks throughout much of the Nashville metropolitan area. NESNet allows companies to transmit scalable data quickly and securely right at their doorsteps. NESNet can offer solutions for all communications needs. More information is available online at nesnetwork.com.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.